Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
I am George Knapp, listening to That UFO Podcast and having one hell of a good time.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and this is your breaking news podcast. I wonder if I should change the name of the breaking news podcast, because this happened 2 days ago now, but I'm just getting to it today. I'm looking at, of course, part three of the Matt Brown trilogy that happened on Weaponized with Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp. A lot of you have wanted me to come on and just chat through the conversation. Some of you have watched it. I've got some thoughts. Others of you haven't watched it and are waiting for this. But once again, for the third time on these three-parters, I would encourage you to go and watch The Hour, because it's fascinating watching. And again, especially in this episode, and I'll point out a few parts, the facial tics, the worry, the nerves that come across from Matthew Brown are really striking here. So for me, if this was the Star Wars trilogy, and of course I am in the original trilogy, folks, part two seems to be The Empire Strikes Back, because that's the one I think most people have felt was the best of the three parts. Can't speak for everyone, but that seems to be reaction. This one's been a little more divisive for various different reasons. But again, I think it's a really strong presentation, really strong. But listen, this one for me has finally given us a bit of a date around when this was filmed. Don't quote me on it, please. But I think we're looking at this being around mid to late March of this year. Initially, during the first breakdowns and when this came out, I thought it was recorded before the hearings in November. And then after part two, they are talking about the hearings. But in this one, there's a few comments made. George Knapp mentions at some point the drone special that was on 60 Minutes, and that, I believe, was around mid-March, March the 16th, I think it was. So he says this is just aired. So I'm thinking this could have been anything from the 18th, 19th, 20th to late March. So that was interesting for me and perhaps frames some of the conversation and brings up some questions as well. But listen, let me get into it. The part three kicks off with more whistleblowers are close to coming forward. Strength in numbers, seeds are planted that if something happens to them, you know, this movement will continue. And again, folks, in this breaking news pod, I'm just talking through the content of what happened. There'll be a proper breakdown. I'll have someone on with me to discuss that in the coming days. But this is more of an immediate reaction with me having just watched the interview. Matt Brown talks about flying out to meet Michael Schellenberger, who, of course, was a journalist who presented the document in Congress, or was alleged to have. This is a big part of the puzzle for me still, and I really would like to hear from Michael Schellenberger on this. It'd be great. I don't see it happening for various reasons. If Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp could get Schellenberger on Weaponized, or even if Schellenberger would talk about it, but I think Schellenberger's role in this has either been a one-stop shop, because Brown talks about flying out to California over the months that Schellenberger vetted Brown. Brown met Grush. Grush put him in touch with Corbell. And then Brown ended up in Congress with the document that was obviously, we've gone into the detail about Corbell actually being the one presenting the report, the Immaculate Constellation report. But Schellenberger then, his involvement afterwards for me is obviously lacking, but perhaps that was just his one role. So there's more definitely to be discussed there, I feel. Corbell mentions feeling the first hearing with Grush from July 2023 with Fravor and Graves was good, it was clean, and that was the general feeling at the time. It was powerful, it had an impact. He feels the stuff leading to the November 2024 hearings was new and it felt different, and I think they landed differently as well. Corbell says Matt Brown was really nervous walking into the building and the offices to meet with congressional folks and staff. He talks about that process and getting Brown in front of the right people. Brown says he felt, or he would have testified at the November 2024 hearing, but wasn't asking to testify and he didn't want to, but he would if he was asked to do it. Obviously, they didn't ask him to do it, and he said he didn't feel ready to do so, but he wanted to make it clear that he would have testified if asked. That would have really framed that hearing in a whole new light for me. I can't imagine it would have made it more powerful and impactful than it actually was. Brown says it's going to take, in his opinion, considerable change for anyone in the know to testify under oath in an open hearing again. Corbell talks about the second hearing being more controlled. He mentions Tim Burchett talking about the executive branch pulling the strings. Matt Brown says that there are minions and stooges, unelected officials, probably CIA, involved in the background with these events and this whole process. Corbell talks about them being happy. The report was put into record in the hearing and he was happy at the time Schellenberger was a good person to be involved in getting it into the hearing. Brown says he took pleasure in seeing the minions being scared at what was happening when the report caught people by surprise at the hearing. Having something on congressional record is more powerful than a news report. It doesn't just go away with a click, it's there now. Knapp asks Brown if there was blowback on him. He believes there were attempts and some may have been successful. He knows internal security may have been on to him since day one. This kind of chat comes up a few times in the interview, but they don't really go into substantial detail on threats or any specifics around any threats on Brown or what may happen to him going forward. But they do touch on a couple of things. Corbell talks about Nancy Mace misrepresenting the report at the time as if it was some just government report. In the aftermath, if you go back and listen to the breaking news pod or the breakdowns of the time, I was really positive about Mace and how she came across. And I think I jumped the gun on that because obviously very quickly she was putting out online for alien and UFO t-shirts and stuff, which was strange given her position and what she had just done literally within minutes and hours. She's not someone who needs to make a quick buck. And I think it came, yeah, like I say, came to light that perhaps Mace... was she literally being controlled? Was she a bit of a stooge in there as part of this and to downplay it? It's not looking like there's been a legacy or impact from her involvement. Here's some good stuff. Here's some really good stuff now. They talk about part of the report mentioning large disks using clouds as concealment. So Corbell says it sounds like Matt had seen visual evidence of this. He asked Brown to explain what it was like seeing. Brown says it was a satellite feed above, obviously from space. He says the size of the disk was striking. It was an infrared. He says it looks like a flying saucer. Maybe it was one of ours. Wrong place at the wrong time. And by that he means that he feels the object was out in the middle of the ocean. It was over a specific part of the ocean, nothing really there. And then he felt the object behaved as if it knew it was being monitored and wasn't meant to be there. That's what gives him the impression it could have been like one of ours, as he says. And he says it acts on this and moves away. This is the stuff I feel could and would be next level drops. If we could get videos of saucers hiding in clouds, that would be massive. That would be big, and we need something like that, I feel, to really kick on. Knapp asks Matt Brown if he's seen videos of these objects being chased or intercepted. Brown is cautious here and he says he has read reports indicating this. He's not seen it himself. He says he has read in reports each country chases its own shapes. And I'm curious on that wording if he meant, you know, for example, China chases more discs, the US chase more triangles, or if it was just the way he spoke. Knapp confirms with Brown that they're more being monitored or chased than shot on or acted on, for example, and Brown seems to confirm that. Knapp talks about Russian warplanes actually crashing with pilots having died after shooting on UFOs, and after those incidents in Russia, pilots and military being told to no longer engage these objects. Again, I love this aspect of the conversation because it goes a little bit speculative, but this seems to be at least a reasonable level of informed speculation on the part of Corbell, Knapp and Brown. Corbell asks, you know, why so many different shapes? It seemed to be one point it was simple. UFOs were flying saucers and it was a simpler time. Don't we all think so? Brown says he believes they are made for purpose, having specific uses depending on the shape. Now, this isn't new information or new thinking. This has been said by many folks over the years and decades. Again, we're looking at Matt Brown in the context of the report, the information he's been exposed to and his role, that's something worth noting there, definitely. Knapp sort of asks him about, you know, over the water and the water playing a large part in this. Or has he seen very large objects go in and out of bodies of water? Brown says he hasn't seen large objects, but has seen small to medium shaped objects. He's seen it in video and had these incidents described to him. Corbell asks about, and this was interesting, you know, change of speed or inertia. Brown says these objects act as if the water isn't there. So again, folks, just to picture in your head, you know, if you see a diver jumping off a high diving board, they go down at some speed, but then they hit the water and they slow. And we've all seen that almost slow motion video of a diver going into the water, no matter how aerodynamic their shape or position, and they slow down and come to a stop. He's saying it's as if the diver would just keep going and the water's not giving any kind of force or pushback or resistance. So really interesting to see if that data is available, if those videos exist, that would be really interesting, because a lot of the content we do see tends to be in infrared and stops when the object seems to go into the water. There's a lot of chatter around sort of stuff like that at this point. I would encourage folks to go and watch that. I'm not going to read the interview verbatim as much as I'm covering the main points. Knapp goes in to talk about the Tic Tac being a good and clear image. Even though folks complain about blurry images, he asks why the public don't see crystal clear imaging. Brown says it's a product of the education system, a lack of general curiosity of the topic, and arrogance. People grow up with so much stigma and mythology, it's easy for them to dismiss the topic. Knapp asks if perhaps force fields around the craft cause issues. Brown says maybe this is why certain shapes are harder to observe than others. Active camouflage has been seen in play. Perhaps it's the skin of the craft. He has seen evidence of fields, multiple fields, plural, around the craft. Corbell mentions that it could be what you actually see when you see a UFO, or certain UFOs are part of a greater structure, which is interesting, that idea. It's incredible that the interesting craft we may be seeing are just part of something else. They're a distraction. They're what they want you looking at when, you know, the left hand is what you're looking at, but the right hand's doing something else. Really interesting. It goes into ideas of, you know, perception management, and if five people all looked at the same object, are they seeing different things? Is that truly the object that's there? Are these things interfering with sensor systems? Who knows? But there's a really interesting depth of conversation around that to be had.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Knapp talks about the 60 Minutes special on the drones having just aired, which makes me think this was recorded mid to late March. Brown takes it that if you're paying attention to mainstream media, this is all propaganda, that the reactions, the reporting on it, that it's controlled, and he names all the kind of big mainstream media sources. He says MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, The New York Times, it's all controlled propaganda. He was disappointed with the government reaction of the events, and including the Trump administration at the time as well. He says he feels going from even Biden to the Trump administration and how it was reported on and how this gets reported on is that if they admit they have no control over what's in the skies, it's an admission of weakness, and to admit weakness is to admit defeat. So it's that, you know, that trait that the mightiest militaries on the planet, the Russians, the US, the Chinese, don't want to admit they don't have control over their own skies or the technologies that may or may not be interfering with them. Corbell makes a point here that I agree but also disagree with, that people need educated on what exactly they're seeing, and people who want to be educated when they see a thermal image, that it's one thing to complain it's blurry and not clear, but it's very difficult and it's actually impressive to catch an object 100 miles away, you know, from the camera in the middle of the night, because an IMAX camera, which would be beautiful 4K, 8K, wouldn't even see that, you know, at night time anyway. I agree with that thought, but also we need better than thermal and infrared, because the general public at large aren't interested in the quality of the recording, even though it was 100 miles away at night time, and the shape. They want to see something HD crystal clear, and I think we're getting to that point. We do want to see that kind of stuff. As much as I find the infrared stuff interesting with the context and all, but I get the arguments for and against that. Brown here goes in to talk about the international cabal situation, that they have taken this topic, this situation, this phenomenon, and made it the source of their wealth and power. He says it doesn't make him feel good. Corbell mentions astronaut Edgar Mitchell saying something similar to him in one of his final interviews. Corbell asks Brown if he's scared, and Brown says it comes in waves. Yes, he is scared, but he makes a conscious effort to not let fear ruin his life. He says, and it's really powerful stuff here, especially towards the end of the interview, folks. Even if you go and watch the last 20 minutes, it's really powerful. He says it's the right thing and the necessary thing. Knapp asks him if talking to them gives him protection. Knapp asks about, you know, if the brakes were cut in your car tomorrow, would you feel at least that would be looked into? And he says, you know, yes, but don't focus on that. If it does happen, focus on the mission. Brown says that the seeds have been planted now by, I imagine it sounds like, the folks in the background controlling this, that he will have to pay for in the future. Knapp asks Brown about his future, his outlook, you know, working for government again. Brown says his career and job is dead now, with the government having a file on him. He says he's been doing this for 4 years now and has till now had no allies or people to talk to. He talks about how lonely it's been, how difficult it's been. But he says he has found them now. He has allies, he has friends, and there is more of us. This doesn't stop. He looks worried and scared as they talk about people being killed for knowing too much. Matt Brown says he believes people have been killed for trying to get the truth out, or they were considered wild cards, had outgrown their use, or were difficult to control. You feel sorry for Matt Brown here. You know, he says he wants to spend time with his wife, his family. He doesn't want to spend it in a cell. He does then say, and I'm going to try and quote here, "This is the fate of our people, and I am willing to pay that price." And that's a heavy comment, folks. This isn't what he wanted to do. You could see his mouth twitching here, and if you watch around his mouth and his cheeks, you can see that he's speaking so well and clear, but this is difficult for him to say. Knapp asks him about, you know, gaming out what happens next, and Brown says, you know, there is more than me, more would come. I could say more if I wanted to. He hopes this, him coming forward, arises a new level of public interest, but he says it needs to be more than him that come forward. I think we saw that from Grush. He pleads to members of the military and intelligence that the time is now to honour your oath or your orders. And if you're going to honour your orders, to step aside. Apologies for the Scottish accent with the word orders, folks. It's too many R's. Corbell knows people are coming forward. He says him and Knapp have recorded with others who are coming forward. He urges people, I'm urging you to watch this moment, as I think Brown's face tells a story. He asks Brown to talk about being able to explain more. Brown says he didn't write everything down. What you've seen in that report isn't everything he knows, and he knows more than he lets on. He explains there are things out of order in the report, there are missing sections, and this is deliberate. He has told someone, at least one person, additional information, but wouldn't elaborate any more. We start to march towards the final minutes of the interview here, and Corbell says, you know, why should folk believe what you are saying? Why should people believe in you? He says, I was there. I lived it. I researched it for years. He talks about the levels of deception involved at the very highest peaks and orders of government. Says he feels as a human being, he's sacrificing a lot for no gain. And I believe that, folks, with him here as well. And I'm intrigued to know your thoughts and opinions. He can't think of anything more pressing than the nation being deceived for an elite few to benefit. At this point, it got me thinking, you know, we've still not seen Age of Disclosure having a release date yet, and it will come out on whatever platform, I don't know. But I'm watching this Matt Brown, you know, nearly 3 hours now. Is Age of Disclosure going to be any more powerful than what Matt Brown is saying and doing and coming forward with? I think, given what Age of Disclosure might be from the people who have seen it, it can be relatively dry and perhaps repetitive. I appreciate there's going to be levels of context and the levels of people speaking, but I think for a lot of people, especially the public, this Matt Brown interview and the work from Corbell and Napier is potentially going to be more impactful. And is it breaking into public consciousness? I was happy to see that Weaponized was the number one podcast in the science charts on Spotify, which is great, because that does indicate an increased level of public, you know, scrutiny and attention. But is it enough? I don't know. So I'm interested to hear what people think, actually. Get in touch with me on that. Use the new website, folks. Go to thatufopodcast.com and use the contact form, ideally, because I get that straight to my email inbox. And let me know what you think about Brown's testimony and what he's saying and the content of it compared to what Age of Disclosure may offer with the multiple talking heads. Knapp asks him about thinking big picture on who or what they are, talking about the intelligence behind these objects and any reason some of this should stay secret. Brown is really, really confident how he speaks here. He says, no, the only reason for secrecy is fear and greed. As for the public reaction, he feels it will largely be indifference unless the stakes of what are happening are made clear. I suppose in this, folks, what I'm taking away from that is if they come out and tell the public, it's aliens, we think this is aliens, we think it's a non-human intelligence, the public would be indifferent to that, because, and what, you know, what next? But if they come out and say, we believe, you know, they're interfering with things, they may be malicious or whatever it may be, then the public may take more interest. So that was an interesting idea. I'd love to have more chats about that. I've got a few ideas for shows coming up in the coming weeks around these ideas. Knapp asks him again as we get to the finish, folks, about attempts to control and manipulate this technology. Brown thinks we have replicated some capabilities in inferior forms. He thinks the US military may have access to some of this, but not all of it. Brown thinks through weapons of mass destruction, they have derived new science that has been suppressed, and he doesn't want to talk about deterrence. Knapp goes back to ask about who they are and why don't they come forward. Brown thinks about his answer and he says they think they are here for us. The reason they are here is us. Sentient life is a precious thing. To some, it's a resource. Humanity, to some level, is a resource to them. He speculates possibly a commodity, possibly entertainment, possibly medical. He says he thinks they have at least been here most of recorded history. Knapp asks if we would see them if they didn't let us, even with the most advanced sensors that are picking them up. And Brown isn't sure. He says he thinks they are just as powerful in many ways as we think, but also less powerful. And I would love that to have been explored more. Perhaps there is more exploration on that, but it wasn't here. He thinks multiple species may be at play, which could be a good thing for us, that it's just not one with perhaps one agenda. And I agree with that. And again, love your thoughts on that, folks. I would really love to hear from as many of you as possible on some of the stuff being discussed here, and I can use that in future shows. Again, thatufopodcast.com. Just had the website redone. Use the contact form. Really easy to use. And he finishes off saying pretty much that he has learned we live in a dream, a carefully constructed reality. We make use of a science that is tightly controlled, suppressed and distorted, and that normal humans, the people, have been left behind. Bigger discussion there again on a part of humanity having access to this knowledge, this technology over the decades and almost breaking away, a breakaway civilization and running the world in the background to their own benefit. He says we live in the Matrix, but it's a more boring version than the movie. Brown says there is no organised help for whistleblowers. It's controlled ultimately by intelligence agencies. And this raises some questions and spotlights on some things for me, but I'll go into that in future episodes. He says if he died tomorrow, he would want people to know they aren't free, that this reality has more to it than you have been allowed to believe, and God is real. The episode then ends abruptly. I was very surprised at that ending. I thought this was a three-parter. It doesn't say there's a part four coming. That remains to be seen. Is there more due to be recorded? I wonder, is that what was recorded back in, say, March, and they've got newer content being released based on reactions? I would love to find out. I'm hoping to get perhaps Jeremy Corbell or George Knapp on the podcast real soon to talk about this, but I appreciate how busy they are, because even like we can see with this Matt Brown stuff, folks, when it looks like nothing's happening, all this was going on in the background last summer leading up to the hearings. Lots of questions, folks, on that. Lots remain. The possibilities, the big one for me is what's next. It seems to be set up for more. Are we going to hear more from Matt Brown? When are these other whistleblowers that have recorded with Knapp and Corbell due to come forward? Big question for me then, and I would love to again to know what you think. There's been no mention of Skywatcher and Jake Barber in any of this. I thought initially that was because this was recorded back in November. But Corbell and Knapp and Matt Brown don't bring up Skywatcher. And for me, That's a big question that needs answered as to why. I'm curious. Maybe it's nothing, but for me, interesting. Folks, thank you so much for listening to me blabber on now for 25 minutes. I hope you've enjoyed this kind of breakdown, review, breaking news pod on part 3 of Weaponized. Go check that out for Corbell and Knapp. I think they've done a wonderful job here, folks. I really do. I appreciate the journalism and the way this has been presented. What do you think is next in the Matt Brown story? Lots to ponder on this, and there will be more shows in the coming days and weeks going into it. Just to say thank you to everyone who has watched the Peter Skafish interview that is available online. Peter, if you don't know, is the co-founder of the Saul Foundation, a wonderful academic, a sociocultural anthropologist, a big mouthful, but he is a really interesting guy and has some wonderful takes and thinking and ideas on the subject of UAP. Go and check that one out. Coming up next week, I've already recorded with Doug Bittner, who is a scientist, part of SCU, the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies. That one's in the can and is about to drop over the next day or two on the paid platform. So go and check out Patreon and Apple for free trials if you're not signed up to the paid platforms. If you would sign up to those, or Spotify, type in that UFO podcast premium, or sign up to a YouTube membership, paying for the podcast, couple of bucks, couple of schmeckles, that's a Rick and Morty reference, not something else that I found out. Couple of dollars, whatever it is your currency is. It really helps out me, the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, folks, and I will speak to you all very, very soon. Hi everyone, if you listen to the podcast on an Apple device, you can support directly by going on to Apple Podcasts and clicking the subscribe button, and for less than the price of a coffee per month, you can get early access to episodes in full, and no adverts or sponsorships like this one you're hearing now. It also supports directly to me at the podcast, so thank you very much. Also, don't forget to go and leave the podcast on Apple a 5-star review, and make sure you click the follow button too. Thanks.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
York. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.